Welcome, everyone, to the Space Game Junkie Podcast. I, as always, am your co-host, Brian, and joining me, as always, is your co-host, Jim.
Now open sourced.
the Jim Source Code Project. That sounds like a sitcom, doesn't it?
Totally does.
About a new widower who's raising a kid by himself.
Jesus, I can just imagine that.
with the help of his mom and his sister, and wackiness ensues. The Jim Source Code Project, Friday nights on ABC.
Yeah.
No, we have a guest this week, folks. Fabian Walderman. Did I say that right?
Mostly, yeah.
How do you say it? I should have asked before we started. I keep forgetting to do that.
Sorry. Fabian Woltermann. It's a German pronunciation.
Oh,
it's a little bit different.
Like that, yeah. Woltermann?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Awesome. Well, Fabian, or do you prefer Fabian or Fabian, or does it matter?
It doesn't matter.
Okay, because I'm an American, I say Fabian. Yeah. that's just how it comes out. I hope not to offend.
Yeah, and if I make a mistake and call him Frankie Avalon or something, because... You know, the Fabian.
Oh, my God. Yeah, yeah. Forgot about that.
Yeah, Fabian.
Oh, my God. Okay. Fabian is known online as the E, and I want to ask you about that name in a moment. But Fabian is the current lead of the Free Space Source Code Project, or SCP. Now, for those of you who don't know, and if you're listening to this podcast, you probably do, but just in case, the Source Code Project is a project that has been going on since the Free Space 2 source code was released back in 2002 because Volition got bought out by another company, THQ at the time.
Yeah, THQ.
And then the Free Space rights, I think, were still owned by Interplay. They were like, well, we can't do anything with this. So they gave the community the source code. And, I mean, the game Free Space 2 already had legs before that because it came with the mission editor, Fred. But after the source code was released, my God, has stuff been happening. So since this is the 15th anniversary of Free Space 2's release, I wanted to do several shows talking about this game. And now before we go any further, I just want to say, you might be saying, Brian, other games came out in 1999. Like, what about X-Wing Alliance? That came out in 99. Why aren't you celebrating that? Well, come on. Do you really need to ask me that?
I mean, X-Wing Alliance is no longer still in active development. That's why.
Yeah.
Well, that's just one of the...
Which I think is a great tragedy, because at the time, we had Free Space, we had X-Wing Alliance.
Yeah.
Great games. I loved both. And Free Space is the only one I can still play on my machine at home, because getting the new one getting X-Wing Alliance to run is just a pain in the ass.
It really is. It really is. So, Fabian,
pretty unfortunate.
Well, maybe to you. I don't miss it that much, honestly.
I miss it every day.
Yeah.
X-Wing Alliance. I don't miss it that much. But, Fabian, how long have you been with the Source Code Project?
Well, my involvement with it started back in 2008, I believe. At the time, I was... I had a new PC, and at the time, the new Battlestar Galactica show was on, and I was a big fan of that, and as a space sim fan, I just wanted to play a game set in that universe, right? So I looked around, and I found Beyond the Red Line, if you remember that, and I started playing it. Felt it was pretty good, and then I noticed that it was based on this Free Space open engine thingy, and I remembered Free Space from back in the day, and so that was a good game, might check that out too, and so I did. And a couple years on, I started checking out the source code. I got involved in the project, submitted a few bug fixes, a few new features. Got involved in the community with the Blue Planet team, and after 6 years now, I've been elected to be the new leader of the Source Code Project when the last one stepped down. So, basically just an iterative process, you might say.
Now, what exactly does being the lead of this project entail?
Well, it's mostly setting the directives for the setting the direction for the project, which features are going to be in the next release, which features are going to be postponed for a later date, making sure that the developers we have working on the engine stay focused on making sure that everyone stays focused on the two prime directives we have on the project, which is one, making sure that people can play FreeSpace on modern machines, and two, making sure that the modders we're supporting have all the features they need to bring their vision and their games to life. So adding new scripting features, adding new altering existing features, that sort of thing.
And it's pretty amazing what can be done with this game. Like, you first mentioned Battlestar Galactica, so I've got Diaspora going now, which is a... Did you work on this one at all, by the way?
Yes, I did. I didn't work too much on it. I had a very small role in it near the end when it was pretty much done already. Diaspora is the project that came out of Beyond the Red Line when that team sort of disintegrated. And it's certainly one I'm very proud of for what everyone has done. And it's certainly one project that the community as a whole is very proud of because it's one of the most technically accomplished things we've done over the years.
It's amazing. I mean, there's a whole new cockpit for this Viper. The flak is the flak coming from the Battlestar Theseus right over there is incredible. Yeah. Oh my god, I'm getting hit by it. Whoa! And
Just from these first moments, it just puts you right into the series, and it has the atmosphere you want, and it's just great.
It is, because it's like it got. I mean, one thing I've always loved about the Vipers in the new series are like the machine gun feel of the cannons, This just totally gets that right. It's absolutely incredible, and
which is a super radical departure from what Free Space was with pew 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 lasers and no cockpit, and so it took the engine, right, and it stands a whole new game up on top of that engine, which is not really easily identifiable from the source project that it was spawned from. But you were talking about, you know, like the disintegration of the Beyond the Red Line team, and then how this team picked this up and ran with it. And that's the thing, being a project manager for an open source project like that, I'm concerned about team cohesion, let's say, of how much in your role is actually keeping the team focused in that, and keeping some redundancy, because if somebody has a real life matter crop up where they have to withdraw from the project for a while, does that stall out development? You know, how do you maintain the project without any particular member being a key?
Well, it's a situation we've run into before, several times, in fact. On the whole, it's the good thing about this project is that we can easily deal with losing the odd member over a year or gaining new members. Because we don't have any real commercial commitments anywhere, and because the engine, as it is right now, is rather stable, is stable and functional, and has a ton of features that people can use to make their own games. Losing someone who was working on a big feature is always a big loss, of course, but.
Whenever the Beyond the Red Line team disintegrated, what caused that? You know, just in terms of differences of opinion,
the official explanation is differences of creative differences, and I know what happened, but I can't really tell you. because it's yeah, sorry.
That's fair.
It's just something that both teams, both Beyond Red Line and Diaspora, have decided to keep private.
Well, and that's fine. But what I'm wondering is, whenever you have an open source project of the magnitude that you're managing, how do you prevent against whatever happened with them from happening in your own team?
Well, I think there's a big difference between what happened to Beyond Red Line and Diaspora and what happens with the source code project. Because, first of all, everyone who works in the source code project is generally on the same page regarding what sort of things we want the engine to do and what sort of features we want to have. And it's not like there's a lot of discussion about the basics of how do we distribute the engine, what platforms do we want to support, that sort of thing. It's definitely a lot less. There are fewer controversial issues that we have to deal with, right? So
it's basically just an issue of prioritization and which features need to make it in and which features can wait. And
Right now we don't. All the people who are working on the engine, we're generally we don't have many conflicts of personality in our team. We generally get along rather well, and we have a modus operandi that allows us to deal with stuff as it happens, and avoid conflicts that would make the project unstable.
Okay, so do you guys commit source out to Git, or where do you guys actually store your stuff?
We have a Subversion repository right now hosted at iculus.org. We are in the process of moving to GitHub just because most of the current coders are already used to Git or are getting used to it through work or other projects.
Okay.
I'm busy.
As being in coordinating this effort, do you have to watch that, you know, what one change that one branch of the coders makes doesn't impact what the other people are working on? You know, like if I went in and changed some fundamental API thing, then that's going to break all the scripting for all the scripter guys and that. So
we do have a code review and acceptance thing, right? So when a new coder comes on, we generally don't give them commit access to our Subversion repository, and we don't. Now, when we're going to Git, we're going to manage everything through pull requests, where everyone can have a look at the code and make sure that it doesn't break anything.
Mm-hmm.
We're curating the source code to make sure that nothing that if someone comes on and does something that would conflict with another project that we got going on, or that would break existing functionality, we're making sure that that doesn't happen.
Okay.
Or if it happens, that it's communicated to the community.
Okay, so what all projects are actually active under the Open Free Space project? Because like the Diaspora is out kind of on its own, right? It uses your product, but it's not really like in-house with you on this, right? So if you guys make engine upgrades and that, it's not retroactively working in their thing, right? So they would have to go and update their code to match what's changed in the engine.
Well, the thing is, Diaspora is hosted at Heartlight.net, where all our development and all our communication happens. And most of the coders that work on Diaspora are also coders for the source code project. So whenever they come up with a feature they need for Diaspora, it's usually directly integrated into the engine.
Oh, okay, so is Diaspora still actively updated? Because I thought it was a deal where they were like, okay, we shipped it, there's 6 missions, we're done, see ya.
No, there are definitely plans in the works to make a second release. They have a campaign outline. They have plans to make a new campaign and a longer campaign and release that. The problem is, of course, that it's an open source project. It's It's a community project, and those just take a lot of time, unfortunately.
Okay.
Yeah, so there aren't that many people working on it.
So what
it
big
looked like there was a, oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, what big projects are under the umbrella of the source code project?
The biggest right now is, of course, the biggest is Diaspora. Then we have the Free Space Upgrade project, which produces the media VPs, and just to make the original game prettier, we have the Free Space Port project, which ports the original Free Space 1 to Free Space 2 and Free Space 0. We have Blue Planet, which is one of the biggest, most high-profile modding projects we have right now. There's Wings of Dawn, which is another big mod that's going to be released as a standalone game sometime in the near future. And I think that's it, basically. There's also Wing Commander Saga, which was a big new Wing Commander game made by fans, which is also based on the Free Space source code project, but which forked the source code several revisions back, and which is they're doing their own thing. They're not really interacting with us, and I think those are the biggest projects. Oh, right. There's also Inferno, which was a mod project that started back in the early days of Free Space modding back in 2002, which is apparently working steadily towards a release, which I'm definitely looking forward to. I think that those are the big names in Free Space modding right now and Free Space game design.
Okay, so do all of those projects sort of stay in lockstep as far as which version of the engine they're using? Because a thing that I ran into was I was playing the Free Space Upgrade, and then I wanted to play Blue Planet, but then I needed to download like a whole new set of gigs of files and put them in a different directory and try to cross-link which mod was going to use which source files and that. So yeah. it would be, maybe you guys have solved that with just having a unified updater or something that keeps them all up to date.
Yeah, that's definitely the goal we're working towards. And for the most part, all projects I've just mentioned are using the one Free Space, the one SCP release that we're producing. Blue Planet is the only project where we decided to ship it with a special executable, which in retrospect was a big mistake I made, and I apologize sincerely for it.
Now, is there a way to back out of that?
There's a compatibility package out there that allows you to play Blue Planet using the normal executable, and the next version of Blue Planet to come out will be based on the regular source code project release.
Okay, so is there a single package installer for Blue Planet that I can get? Say I have nothing from Free Space open on my machine. Is there just one thing that I download and it installs Blue Planet and I can play it? Or do I have to go through a process?
There is a process, and it's it involves going to fsoinstaller.com, downloading the installer, and running it. It's a small little Java application. And it will basically, you just point it at your Free Space directory, and it gives you a list of mods it can install. And then you let it download for a few hours, and then you have it all set up.
Okay, so that's an interesting thing, too, that you say about you pointed at your existing Free Space install folder. So yes. Does that mean that I have to, because Good Old Games sells Free Space. Like, for a long time it was in limbo, yeah. and nobody owned it. Well, now Good Old Games has rights to distribute it. So does that mean in order to utilize your free source code project that I have to own a purchased version from them, and then your stuff lays on top of that?
Or is yes, it absolutely. That's no. That's we're back in the day when all the rights were in limbo. We did distribute basically a pirated copy of Free Space 2 just so people can play it. Now that GOG has Free Space in store, we generally point people at GOG to get Free Space legally and to get to give the developers a bit of money for it. The general concept for Free Space Open is that someone has Free Space installed either off the disks or off GOG, and just gets the Free Space 2 Free Space Open stuff and copies it into their Free Space directory and is ready to go. So yeah.
And I did all that manually, and that was a fun time. I'll be honest, I didn't even know the open and start. Like, I was told a while ago it wasn't working anymore, and I didn't know it's working again. Does it download the latest stuff, like the 2014 media VPs and everything? It downloads all the latest stuff?
It definitely should. I have to check that right now, but it definitely should get the latest stuff that is available.
Okay, good. Because I was talking to you before the podcast. Yeah, one thing that I've had some issue with is when I tell people to get Free Space 2 and get Free Space Open, it's like they're like, okay, how do I do that? I'm like, okay, you have to download all this stuff, and then you have to download and run this thing, and then you have to run, and then you have to tell this thing to point to that thing, and it's a bit confusing. I think it'd be very confusing for new players.
Yeah, most new players, if you have to open a text file and change something, their brain ejects and they're done. It's I could just go buy something instead, you know.
Yeah, that's basically why we resurrected the FSO installer and try to get that usable. Okay. Because as you said, it's a big hurdle for people to set this all up.
Yeah, but it doesn't need to be. It doesn't need to be, especially with the new WX launcher, which I just started using. It makes things a lot easier, surprisingly, which is really nice.
The end goal we have in mind over the next few months and years is to integrate both the WX launcher and the installer into one complete package. Ooh. So you just get the WX launcher, and walks you through the whole setup process, and basically that you can do everything through WX launcher.
Oh, that would be lovely, because I love your forums, but there's a lot of stuff there. There's a lot of stuff there, and it's really I mostly lurk there because it's so easy to get lost. It's so easy to get lost because there's just so. It's hard-light.net, guys. And it's if you find yourself, you're liking the Free Space thing, you want more missions, you want more campaigns, that's the one-stop shop for freaking everything.
Yeah, and you guys are making millions of dollars doing this, right? Like, the money just flows.
Oh, I wish.
That'd be nice.
I wish.
That would be
so. How do you fund the project? Is it all donations, or most of the coders are the ones kicking in for it?
Oh, we generally don't have that many expenses. The only expenses we have are hosting costs for Hardlight.net and the various places where the mods are hosted. The license that Volition released the source code under specifically prohibits us from making money through the game. We can't sell anything based on that source code. So generally, everything we do is for free. And our only source for revenue is donations to the Hardlight hosting fund, so we can keep the site online.
Okay, so what are some of the enhancements that have happened to the game? Yeah, let's cover like the big stuff. I know the texture resolution is way up.
Right, right. Okay, so the first really, really big stuff, big thing that happened and what really kickstarted the whole source code project thing is the port to Linux, Linux and Mac OS X. Then the whole engine got ported from Direct3D to OpenGL and OpenGL only. And well, after that, we have the modding system. Previously, you could only do mods by putting VP files into your FreeSpace directory, and which generally meant that you could only have one mod at a time, else stuff would conflict and mess things up. Then, of course, the whole graphical improvements we did using modern shaders, allowing people to use higher polygon models or models with higher polygon count, more detailed textures, and all that stuff. And what else?
Well, there's a lot of new visual effects too that I've noticed, like the shimmer on the engines and things like that. A lot of lighting mods.
Yeah. Yeah, that's there's a lot of lighting improvements, which all came through when we did shader support. Opening that up, enabling that, opened up a whole lot of new effects that we can do now that we couldn't before. And well, there's a lot of stuff still coming. I mean, we're trying to get a new renderer up that can do way better lighting, including shadowing and all that good stuff. One big thing that we did that kind of fell by the wayside is multiplayer support, because when Volition released the source code, they had to remove all the multiplayer support for legal reasons, and we basically wrote a new multiplayer backend, and so that people can do that.
Oh, is there a pretty active multiplayer community still?
Unfortunately, no. Multiplayer is one of the big problem areas that we have right now. We don't have a big active multiplayer community, and as a result, the multiplayer side of things doesn't get enough testing to make sure that it really runs well. You can get it to run, but it's still quirky as hell, and it doesn't work as well as we want it to.
Okay, is it mostly like a dogfight adversarial thing, or can you play the campaign cooperatively?
You can do dogfights. You can do cooperative missions. You can do team versus team missions. All that stuff. We can. There's a lot of potential to make new game modes in the engine. I think the original Beyond the Red Line shipped with a mission that basically was a King of the Hill type mission, which was pretty fun.
Hmm. Yeah, for a long time, the Free Space Project was pretty much the only space game being actively developed in the world, you know, other than a few weird Eastern European things. So what's the reaction like now that you guys have kept the genre alive, and then you see things like Star Citizen and Elite being reborn and that. So do you guys kind of take a sense of pride from that? Like, you know, we enabled that.
Yeah, definitely. Seeing that there's still that much active interest in the genre, and seeing how Star Citizen and Elite Dangerous and Enemy Starfighter, seeing the reception those projects got, was definitely a big boost to our confidence in what we're doing. Because when you're working on a game like this, a lot of time you're basically working in a vacuum, because you don't get that much feedback from users. Most people will just consume the content you're producing and will never talk to you. And basically seeing that there is a big community out there that likes this stuff, that still wants to play this stuff, it's just so satisfying on so many levels. It's really, really great.
Yeah, and I don't know if you've heard, but they're making new Star Wars movies. And, and I think it's also due to the Free Space Project keeping interest in space.
I would hesitate to take credit for that. One moment. Nack had a question in the Space Game Junkie chat. He asked whether we have considered replacing the underlying engine entirely and get rid of the original source and build a new engine.
I hope not.
Well, the thing is, back in the day, way long before I joined the project, there actually was an effort to do a blind rebuild of the engine, to build something that can read the same data files but doesn't use any of the code we got from Volition. And that really fell apart because it's doing that is a lot of work. Building a new engine from scratch, that's really, really hard, as it turns out. And the thing is that the underlying source code for Free Space was really solid, actually. There's a lot of things Volition did back in the day that made the game really stable, really solid, and great for modding. And rebuilding that from scratch, well, it's just a lot of work, and really, we didn't need to do it, so we didn't.
Yeah, there's no need at all. I mean, this game is already gorgeous. I mean, it's just I'm just blown away by how good this looks, even though the game is 15 years old. And it's been worked on for 12 years. And what amazes me about this is that the community has stayed active for that long. Like a lot of game communities, they fizzle out after a little while, or you know. But some games, they keep the community going strong for ages. And
yeah.
And this one, it's just astounding. And I lost. I lost the base.
Yeah, it happens.
It happens.
Yeah, but this game, I'm watching Brian play here, and the game is just phenomenal looking. It looks like it could be released today as a modern product. Yeah. It doesn't feel like some game that's almost 20 years old, or 15.
Which is, again, one of the great benefits of having an active and very skilled community that's stayed active for close to 2 decades now. It's... the Media VPs, for example, they're just a collection of models that have been produced by the community over years and years that upgrade the whole look of the game to modern standards. And it's, well, slow and steady wins the race, you know?
Yeah. And it's just incredible. I mean, just look how good this nebula looks, for crying out loud. It's just... Yep. Utter, yes.
So Blue Planet's the project that you're closest to, right?
Yeah, it's close to my heart.
So what's going on with Blue Planet that makes it different from Vanilla Free Space? Is it just a completely different universe, or is it more in the same universe, or what?
Blue Planet is set in the same universe as Free Space. It basically tries to... it basically tries to tell a story that could be Free Space 3, but which we're definitely not saying it is. It's definitely our version of what could happen next in the Free Space universe. It's we're also taking the narrative in completely different directions than what Volition did back in the day. We're using a voice protagonist. We have tons and tons and tons of text, and Free Space 2 and Free Space 1 were both very minimalist games, especially compared to X-Wing Alliance and the Wing Commander games.
It's true.
And that's a quality that's very hard to replicate. So we didn't try to. We did basically a big narrative-driven game that that we could write. And well, we're basically trying to take all the small little hints that we got from in Free Space through the Ancients cutscenes and through stuff in Free Space 2, and trying to tell our story of the Free Space universe.
Yeah, because the first Blue Planet takes place, what, 50? No, 20 18, years after Free Space 2, roughly?
18 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A new gate is built, and they go back to Earth, and all...
Yeah, they go back to Earth, but they don't go back to the Earth that they wanted to go back to.
Oh, they don't. It's really depressing. It's really, really sad.
Yeah, it's we...
But then again, happiness and joy has never been a staple of the Free Space 2, of the Free Space, has never been a staple of the Free Space series.
When Free Space 1 basically pits you against a big swarm of aliens that you can't interact with in any way except shooting them. That can blast planets out of the sky and have big, invincible capital ships that can ruin everyone's day. There's not much room left for hope. And when Free Space 2 comes along and basically retells that story, the entirety of the Free Space 1 story is told in the first two acts of Free Space 2. And then you defeat the big Sifanis and you feel glad and you feel joy and you think, wow, we're really going to kick the Sheevan's ass and get rid of that menace. And then they drop 80 other juggernauts and blow up a sun. Well, hope is something that happens to other people in Free Space.
Yeah. Yeah, not the happiest.
And I see you just found the Vanishing Ravana bug. Nice.
Yeah. That was I'd never seen that before. That was a good time. Yeah. That was a real good time.
it's an issue that has popped up and that we're working on. And
I have honestly never seen it before. It's just
I hadn't seen that one too. I've played through the honestly these missions in the nebula where you're just flying through that fog
are wonderful.
Well, they're wonderful, and if you're not having to fly it, it's great to watch. but it's the whole deal of just having that giant ship come out of the fog right in front of you.
Yeah. That's one of the great things that Free Space did. It really used these nebula missions to really give you a sense of scale, of a sense of foreboding, really. And when you see the Sifanis for the first time, you see that big spike coming at you, and then you realize there's just one arm of it, and there's a really giant big crab thing at the end of it. That's one of the greatest moments in gaming, I think.
Ugh, fudge! Whoa! Yeah, this mission... I really love this stuff in the Nebula because it just adds a level of creepiness that... Am I the last guy? Oh, I'm the last guy. Oh, boy.
Yeah, you are.
There you go. See, the thing to me, the first time I played Free Space was whenever you get between two capital ships that are duking it out with the beams, and they don't care about you. But they also don't care about you. So, you know, if you just happen to be in the way when that beam sweeps across, then you're instantly dead, start over. But that's cool because it's not like I have invincible shields that can withstand capital ship size weapons, which I thought was really cool in that whole series of games. Is just, you don't even get that. Like in the Star Wars games, right? Whenever you'd have a Star Destroyer shooting at you and you can just weave around the shots and that's a whole different feel, you know. But there, it's like the capital ships shoot at you with the same guns they shoot each other. And they don't have any kind of flak defenses and stuff like that. And I think that's pretty interesting in Free Space. You know, they're throwing a lot of trash out in the sky and they've got like anti-aircraft fire going to deal with the fighters And it also makes it feel like fighters have a purpose because fighters can get in and deliver ordnance that the capital ships have a harder time dealing with because that's the argument that comes up in space games a lot is why do you even need starfighters because you would just have these two giant ships duking it out and what difference do fighters make? And I think that was a big thing in Diaspora, because they illustrate that quite well, is that there's this zone of annihilation between the two ships, because it's the missile volleys destroying each other, and then you use the fighters to flank around the sides of that and deliver ordnance.
Goodbye, Ravana.
Yeah, Diaspora had the space combat balanced so that the Theseus could defend itself rather well against a base star or two, but they really needed to send out their fighters and make sure that those base stars have their weapons neutralized. And that's giving the player an active role in those big engagements. That's always a very hard trick to pull off, but when it works, it's great. And finding roles for capital ships and balancing them against the roles a player can do, that's one of the great challenges for free space mission design. And it's a problem that the community has worked on for a decade, and we got really good at it, I think.
So how do you guys deal with because there's so much voice acting in the game? Whenever things are going on, somebody will pop up and they say things. Are you using a lot of the pre-existing canned voice acting stuff from the original game and bringing that into Blue Planet, or do you have a whole team that's recording things for the new content?
For Blue Planet, we're trying to get everything voice acted, because we have tons and tons of dialogue that is just hard to absorb through reading. You really need it voice acted, and to get the story really.
Yeah. Have you tried to contact any of the original voice actors and see if they'll contribute? Like the guy that did the briefings and stuff. That would be really nice to have him consistently.
It would, but I don't think we tried. I don't think I think we asked who that was, and then I think the answer was it was just someone from the Volition offices. And we didn't really try, because as it turns out, getting voice actors, especially on a project with the scope of War in Heaven, is really hard, because there are a lot of roles, there's a lot of dialogue to cover, and it just takes ages to get done, especially when, like us, you don't have any budget for to pay actors to do it. Although I am happy to report that the War in Heaven voice acting effort is in its last stages. I don't know when we can release it, when it's going to be complete, but we do have scrounged up a few dollars and hired a manager for us who can find us a few roles. So we hope to get that done soon.
Oh, cool. Hey, whatever
this year.
Whatever happened with the Babylon 5 project? It was Babylon 5 iFounder.
iFounder doesn't have anything to do with us.
Okay.
iFounder was a standalone project that some guys in Russia did, I think. There's of course the Babylon project, which is a great big total conversion for free space that gives you the entire pool of Babylon 5 ships to play with, and that project was. That project basically was declared complete a couple of years back. The team has disbanded, and no one really wanted to work on it anymore, which is, in my opinion, a shame, really, because the Babylon project was the first one to really do all that pseudo Newtonian stuff that. That Diaspora later perfected.
Yeah.
And as it stands, the Babylon project, you can still download it, you can still play it, and it's still a great sandbox to play, and you can still do a campaign in that universe.
Yeah, I really like that semi-Newtonian physics thing. And I'm also wondering if anybody has done anything with the engine that would be like larger ships. You know, not necessarily like where you fly a battleship or whatever, but although it would be interesting, right? Like if you could well, command a battle cruiser or something and launch fighters.
You can. There is actually a mission shipped with War in Heaven. If you go in the campaign room in War in Heaven, you see two campaigns. One is War in Heaven, and one is a mini campaign consisting of only one mission called The Blade Itself, which puts you at the helm of one of the UEF's capital ships and gives you that to play with. It's definitely possible to do missions like that. There's a community member by the name of Lepanto, who has kind of specialized in doing those. And it's definitely an interesting experience to do.
Well, how do they handle that? Right? Because not all the ship's guns are forward facing, right? So you could steer the ship, but are all the guns just on autopilot?
What we did is we do have a scripting interface in the engine, which allows us to do little Lua scripts and to enhance the gameplay. And through that, we could do a little menu that basically allows you to set targets for your turrets and control them more directly when you could. It basically allows you to control your turrets in a more directed manner than just flying near something and hoping that the AI decides to shoot it.
Oh, okay. Right? So is there scope that anybody could do something crazy like, hey, let's make a free space engine real-time strategy game or something like that? Or are you kind of limited to just, I'm going to fly a ship? Or is the engine actually pretty open about doing crazy things?
The RTS thing has been tried. It's definitely possible to do it, but it's not exactly elegant. And I don't think... for War in Heaven Act 3, which I don't know if you've played that, we tried to do a lot of experiments with alternate forms of gameplay. And the scripting interface we have is very flexible, and it allows you to do some really crazy stuff that takes you out of the usual free space gameplay mode. And you can do something like an RTS. You can do something like a 2D shmup. But it requires a lot of work and some experience with the engine.
Okay. So at this point, the development stuff that you guys are doing, is it mostly Lua scripting for the missions than that, or you know, beyond engine improvements?
Most of the development we're doing is either requests by modders, like say someone wants a scripting feature implemented, someone wants a new option for ships, some behavior altered, and well,
was it like handle most of the mission creation in Fred, the Free Space editor, or do you do that elsewhere?
Fred is still the main tool for content creation in Free Space.
It's pretty because it's pretty amazing, isn't it, Fred? It allows you to do so freaking much.
It's I know that people who actually work in the games industry, they tell me that what Fred can do is Fred is so much more comfortable to use and so much more powerful than the tools that are usually given to actual developers, industry developers. It kind of amazes me a little, really. But again, that's what happens if you have one tool that the entire community used for over a decade, and that is enhanced according to our feedback from our users.
Now, the source code project has been going on for 12 years. So off the top of your head, do you know how many campaigns and missions have been created for this damn thing? Because it's a lot, isn't it?
I have no idea. It's a lot, really. There's a list on the Heartlight Wiki somewhere, which has most of the released campaigns, and it's I don't know. I have no idea, and I no real interest in finding out, because it would be just too depressing to see all those campaigns you're never going to have time to play.
But it's just amazing that you think of all the content that's available for a 15-year-old game made for free by fans of the game. I mean, the only other games I've really seen that have that much kind of dedication and longevity and the amount of user-made content are the Thief games. I don't know if you've seen how many missions are available for Thief 1 through 3, but it's astounding. And this kind of reminds me of that kind of community over at, what the hell is that community's name? Something Glass? I forget.
Looking Glass? Something.
Well, that was the name of the company, but
okay.
But through the Looking Glass, maybe? Something like that? I forget. But yeah, very few other games have this kind of longevity, and it's because the game itself is so bloody good. I mean, even if you just did the Source Code Project stuff, you still have an incredible game that still is the best in the business.
Yeah. Yeah, it's. I think the secret to the success is really that from the release on, the community has been given tools to create content and has been encouraged to do so by the developers. We had when the game shipped, it shipped with the mission editor. It shipped with a very good tutorial to use it, and going from there and going from the intentional sparseness of Free Space and Free Space 2, that just allowed everyone to allowed the community to really get their imagination going, really get them involved.
Yeah, I think it's just that there's so much improvement that has been done beyond the base game. And it's kind of disturbing. Like, people go to Good Old Games and they buy Free Space 2, and there's no announcement, you know, when they buy it that, hey, you should go over to Hardlight and get the rest of the game, you know? that's what I think that the project needs, is more exposure. Because all those people that go and they pay $5 or $9 or whatever for it, and then they've got this game, and it's like, oh no, you've only got, like, the tip of that. You need the rest. And you need to be aware that this exists. And I do wish that Good Old Games, maybe you guys can contact them, because it does them a favor too, right? Like, if people are aware that this project is there, then they'll buy the game.
I do know that they did an article years, like, and years ago about that we are out there about us and what we're doing. And I did he at some point there were talks for some sort of affiliate program with them, but I have no idea what happened to that and or why it fell apart. It was way before my involvement with the SAP, and it's something. Maybe I'm one of these days I'm going to contact them and ask them what we can do to resurrect that. Maybe, hopefully.
Yeah, because it would be nice just right on the store page, just have a link to the Source Code Project or to fsoinstaller.com. It's like, after you do this, go there.
Yeah,
exactly. And then, because I don't think people know what they're getting into when they – I mean, not only are they buying into the legacy of this project, but they're buying years and years worth of enhancements, of content. You know, I mean, I'm playing this Blue Planet thing right now, and this is astounding. I love this Vulcan gun, by the way, buddy. I'm a big fan of that. Big fan of the Vulcan here. Come on.
Well, these capture designs are all new, too.
So. Yeah. Well, this takes place many years after Free Space 2, so.
Yeah, it takes place 18 years after Free Space 2, and it takes place on the other side of the portal into into Seoul space. And basically in the 50 years between the Seoul portal being closed through the Lucifer exploding and it reopening 18 years after Free Space 2, there were a lot of divergent developments there. So the UEF capital ships all behave differently. They have different weapons and there's a different philosophy to them. As you said before, when you're flying for the GTVA, you're basically trying to stay away from capital ships as much as possible because at any given time, they can fire a beam right near you and fry you, right? So what we did in with those ships is we give them very powerful flak and we encourage you to stay near them because they can protect you and they won't hurt you as much as a beam-equipped ship will. Just to build a different dynamic between you and the capital ships.
Yeah, the lighting effects are also amazing. I don't know if you can see, but I'm looking at this jump gate has these amazing pulsating lights. Yeah. And
is that part of the reason that you guys forked from the main project code was to get some of the lighting and shader stuff in?
Because that's a preview build of the new renderer we are working on, which will allow, which basically uses a technique called deferred rendering, which allows us to use a lot more lights than we could in the standard engine, so that all these little glow points we have there can actually be light sources and be and affect the lighting of the scene. And yeah, it's that's basically why we wanted to why we had to fork the engine.
It's weird. In all the years that I've owned and loved Free Space 2, I haven't really toyed with the mods much because a little intimidating because there are just so many. I mean, the mods like this and the campaigns, it's a little intimidating. But when I asked you which couple mods like we should show people who might have never played this to give them an idea of what's available. I think the two you chose, Blue Planet and Diaspora, are really good examples because Diaspora, you just install and you go. You don't have to do any funny mod stuff. It's just a self-contained thing. And if you've even seen Battlestar Galactica on the television, you know what you're getting into. Blue Planet's a little more involved. Go ahead.
Yeah. There's a thread in the forums by forum member General Batuta who does a really good job of giving you a quick overview of the best mods available. Just trying to find the link. And it's really there it is. Batuta's Guide to Finding Your First or Next Campaign. It's called, and I'm going to link it in the chat in a moment.
Put it in the Skype window too, if you could.
Yeah, sure. That's just giving you a good overview of what can be done. Where the hell is the
Jesus crazy. I'm going to die fast in this one. I'm already getting... Oh, my God.
There you go.
Thank you. I heard it.
Let's just give it... It's just going to give you a good overview of what you can do once you have Free Space 2 and what direction the various mods can go in.
Okay, awesome. That'll be a good place to start. Yeah, we'll definitely put all this in the show notes too, because that's one of the reasons I wanted you on the podcast so we could talk about. Oh my God, I just got four missiles launched at me. Yeah, four.
Yeah, that mission is it's a trap, really.
It feels like a trap. It certainly feels like one.
Coming out directly in the field of fire of an Aeolus Corvette, and it's dodge or die.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I had to do. That was crazy. Okay. Oh God, all these cap ships. I don't even know what to do here. Okay. I was gonna shoot somebody.
So in the Free Space universe, it seems it's exclusively ships that are militaries that are fighting with each other, but you never see any civilian traffic. Is that just not a factor? Or,
you do a little bit. Like in the first mission, there are refugees you're escorting away.
Yeah. The problem is that there definitely is a there aren't a lot of civilian ships or civilian stations to use, which has changed in the last couple of years because people have noticed that not having these assets available makes the missions duller. And
well, I just didn't know if maybe it was the universe. Like, space is so dangerous that you don't dare go up there unless you're the military.
No,
so.
I think it's just the problem is, of course, if you put a purely civilian ship somewhere, it's going to be an escort mission, and no one likes those, right? And doing an escort mission right is really hard, and so most people don't want to do them. They're just going to do the interesting bits, the shooty bits, the battles between hostile forces.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because no one likes an escort mission. Even though I love the escort list in Free Space 2, it's one of my favorite things in any space game. In all honesty,
no, I just want a game where I can fly around like a Millennium Falcon. And just pick up cargo pods and drop them off.
We already did that, man. We already did that.
I know. That was a discussion Brian and I had. It was like, yeah, X-Wing Alliance, man, we're finally going to fly that Millennium Falcon. And then those were the worst missions in the game.
So boring.
Yeah. So it sounds like something that you really want to do, but when you actually get to do it, it isn't as interesting.
I really like these ships that have the spinny parts on them.
The
wheels
there we go.
Going
That's
around.
The official term, spinny bits.
Yeah,
there's no reason for them except they look cool.
Oh yeah, definitely. Well, you know, they've actually there were some studies that I was reading about where they said that people in space, your heart, because of the lack of gravity, the heart actually changes shape into more of a spherical form. And macular degeneration in the eyes and stuff. So, like, the whole zero gravity. So they're saying if we actually did do, like, a mission to Mars, we're going to have some sort of simulated gravity. Otherwise, people would just be medically screwed by the time they got there. So,
I gotta say...
Except, of course, that all falls apart in free space because free space has artificial gravity and they don't need rotating bits.
Oh,
but
it looks
rotating
good.
Bits look cool, and therefore they are on the ships.
I gotta say, I just wanted to say real quick, this cap ship I'm looking at, these internal lights here in the bay, how they light up these little launch bays differently is just incredible.
I know, it looks like there should be some disco music going on.
Exactly. Exactly. It's just, someone's attacking me. Okay.
Yeah, that's another thing we did in, that scene. Now the subspace missile strike comes in.
What? Is that what that was?
You need some sort of stealth skipper torpedo to frustrate Brian, because that was honestly the worst thing in Wing Commander 3 is those teleporting torpedoes you had to hunt
down.
That's
kind of what you just did, dude.
If you look at the other cap ship, that the big one you're near to currently flies toward, you're going to see it explode in a few seconds.
But all the ravers on the
spoiler, deck. Man! Oh no! Wait, what the hell is happening to it? It's turning white. Whoa! What the hell? Oh, son of a bitch! You were right. Well, of course you were right. You freaking made this, didn't you? Damn it. See, another thing I love about this game is you fail every now and again, and it's not okay, but it happens, and you're supposed to hate it.
Sometimes you're scripted to fail, though.
Yeah. Here we go. Yeah, sometimes you, especially in War in Heaven, we're really doing it's a heavily scripted mission, a heavily scripted campaign, and sometimes they just are forced losses, because it's a war and you're going to lose, at least some of the time. It's not going to be your Alpha One and you're just waiting in there and you're securing. You're winning every objective and winning the war through that. And it's just a different feel we wanted to convey in Blue Planet and War in Heaven.
Son of a bitch.
So when you get done with this, what I'm going to need is for you guys to port TIE Fighter over.
Well,
oh my God,
you mentioned that. There actually is a Star Wars Total Conversion in the works called Fate of the Galaxy. I have no idea when they're going to release, but they are well on their way to a release. They have quite a few models already done. They have a interesting. They've a few interesting gameplay concepts that I'm really looking forward to trying out. So that's going to happen eventually.
Oh, cool. Unless Disney comes and steps on it.
Yeah, well, unless that happens, of course, yeah.
Maybe if they just don't sell it,
just never tell the mouse that it's happening. Boy, those ships have a lot of beams.
Yeah.
They look very angry.
Oh my God, yeah.
Yeah,
that was...
Because those are GTVA ships that are attacking you, and the GTVA, of course, has beams. Your side doesn't. And as it turns out, having beams is a really big advantage.
Yeah, damn right it is. Oh, that was painful to watch.
Yeah,
was,
Brian, next time you're at the store, pick up some beams. We'll put that on my to-do list.
I'm supposed to withdraw to a safe distance, and then what? Okay, I don't know what I'm doing.
And flee.
I'm fleeing.
Yeah, I think safe distance means I can't see those ships anymore. That's...
Okay, well, I'm still fleeing, and they're still shooting at stuff. Whoa, what are they shooting at?
You probably missed it. There's a wing of bombers and gunships that jumps in and attacks these corvettes here.
Oh, I see it. There we go, I see it.
They're basically defending against that.
Oh, my God. That's amazing. Yeah, I'm getting away. I'm running away. Are they jumping? Oh, they're jumping. They're leaving.
Yeah, that's something we did in one of the big goals for Blue Planet is to make the behavior of the enemy and your own capital ships be sane, basically. These capital ships will retreat if they're too damaged, if their objective is complete and they don't have anything to do anymore, which in Free Space 2 they didn't. In Free Space 2, when a capital ship appears, it generally stayed on scene until it explodes or the mission ends. And that's not going to happen here.
Well, that and the starfighter behaviors, how is that scripted is just as far as general AI behavior? Is it just a big, long logic tree?
On the engine level, yes, it is. There's a huge amount of special cases for the AI that governs its behavior. For models, we have something called AI profiles, which allows you to fine-tune the behavior of the AI, how brave they are, how accurate they are with the weapons, and how good their ship handling is. And for War in Heaven, we took advantage of that, and we made the AI much more dangerous and much more intelligent than it is in retail free space.
Okay, so you could set your own AI wingman to be more like amateurs, and then you go up against experienced pilots who are more accurate and use better maneuvers and things. Yeah. So how do they decide? If you're shooting at them, the AI has to realize like I'm being shot at, and then does it take into account like how many supporting craft are around me? Am I near a capital ship? Should I start dodging? And how does it choose like defensive maneuvers and that?
That's an area I can't really speak about because I don't know the AI code that well. It's not an area I'm as a coder. I'm very much much familiar with.
Okay, and to me, being a non-coder, that's just kind of pure magic, you know.
To me, as a coder, to me, it is as well.
It has to be some sort of switched list that's based on whatever factors you feed it. But the concept of doing a branching logic tree that deep is kind of mind bending to me. So,
Okay, wait a minute. I've been playing Blue Planet, this thing, on easy? That was easy? What the hell is wrong with you people? That was easy?
Yeah, it is.
Well,
yeah, so, So what does the difficulty slider actually do in these missions when you go from easy to hard? Is it more enemies or smarter enemies or what?
It controls how much the enemy cheats. The higher the difficulty, the more unchained the AI gets. On insane, the AI operates under the same rules you do. It does the same amount of damage with the same weapons. It has the same maneuvering capabilities as you do with the same ships. On the lower difficulties, the AI gets hampered. It does less damage to you, and you do more damage to it. Its reaction time gets lower, and it's higher, rather. And those sort of things.
Okay, so if I put it, if I'm playing on easy, and then I can kind of lazily follow a ship around and stay on his tail and that. But if I turn him up to insane, then he's going to maneuver as much as that ship can and shake me off and probably kill me.
Yeah. And there are tricks in the AI through AI profiles where you can make an AI that is better at you, that can get more out of a ship. And we're actually using that in some fights here when we really want to give you a really hard fight. There's one mission here in here whose name eludes me at the moment, that basically pits you and three other wingmen against a team of three hard AI fighters, and it's one of the hardest dogfights in the game.
Oh, cool. So this gives you the ability that you could have, like, generally mediocre pilots and then embed an ace and maybe put a distinctive tracking on his ship, right? So it's like, well, there's the Red Baron, and...
Yeah, those are all things you can do, and a lot of models these days actually do, and it's all in the name of better gameplay.
Oh, cool! I think Brian is playing that mission where you fly the cap ship now.
Yeah,
or something.
That's exactly what I'm playing, and this is kind of crazy.
What you can do, you can use the arrow keys to control the weapons you're currently you're equipped with. Down on the left, you can see this readout, and it starts with mass drivers, automatic, and all that. And you can switch between modes for those weapons. They have an automatic mode in which they're completely controlled by the AI. They have a lock mode where they attack whatever you're using right now. Whatever you're targeting right now, and they have an off mode, which I don't recommend you use.
I don't know what's happening.
Hey, Brian, I have to stop for about two, three minutes. I'll be right back.
Okay.
I really recommend that you read the briefing for this mission because it tells you what you can do, what abilities you have.
Okay.
Which,
That hurt. I'm hurting.
Yes, it does.
I'm hurting the other one though. I'm hurting this guy. Yeah. Come on.
What we found out in doing this mission is that fighting a cap ship, flying a cap ship, when you do it, the game becomes more about precise maneuvering and positioning than it is about dogfighting ability. It's more about you getting your ship into the right place to do the maximum amount of damage to you to your targets.
Why aren't you targeting the ship anymore? This is crazy. Okay, we got that. Oh! We got that ship. Yeah, this is amazing that this game can actually do this. This is pretty amazing. This is pretty incredible.
It's something we also have revisited in War in Heaven Act 3, where we're giving you a small little patrol boat type of thing. to fly around in, and it's also a very, very fun mission.
Oh, this is crazy. Now, how do I shoot a gun? Like, how do I, if I want to shoot the beam gun myself, how do I do that? It's on automatic right now.
That's the thing. This ship doesn't have guns that you can fire manually. It's all controlled through the AI. You can direct the AI, but you can't tell it when to shoot. Basically, it takes its own judgment there. The mission I talked about, that's a ship where we gave you a couple of guns you can control manually.
Right. Uh-oh. Move. Oh, collision. Oh, that hurt.
This here, that was basically our first attempt at doing this sort of stuff. Well, it came out all right.
No, this is kind of, I'm not doing too well. Oh, God, don't hit me.
You do have a damage control ability. If you press 2 right now, you can recover a bit of health.
Oh, very nice. Okay. Uh-oh, we got a bad guy in the thingy jig. Unknown device. Yeah, I kind of love this because this is supposed to be a fighter engine game thing, and yet here I am driving a cap ship. It's just really just impressive. I don't know. Where is the thing? I'm supposed to be going to this unknown object thing. I don't know where it is. Oh, there it is.
It's at the gate you're flying towards.
I see it. What is that thing? It looks funky.
Well, I could tell you.
Don't tell me. It's probably going to blow up the gate and I'm going to be screwed. This is kind of fascinating how you guys put all this together. Damage control, all this stuff. Yeah, it's working. My hull integrity is up from, it's a strike corvette. That's not cool. Okay. We're going to kill that thing.
Ramming speed, Captain.
Yeah, right? All right, totally ramming speed. Oh, he's really far away. Let's see. Okay, so I lock onto that guy, track that thing, and I'm going to track the torpedoes. Okay, that's cool. All right. So I just got to get closer. No afterburner. Oh, my God, this thing does have afterburners.
Yes, it does. Because why would it have?
I guess it's true. Why wouldn't they have afterburners? That's very true. Okay, so I set the mass drivers and the torpedoes to track the Tritia. So hopefully they'll shoot it.
Yeah, we need a Spaceballs total conversion where I can have a intergalactic Winnebago.
Then you have was that Spaceball 1 the name of that ship?
I have no idea.
No, that's the big maid thing.
Oh, Meteor Maid.
Yeah, I think that was called Spaceball 1, I think. Uh-oh, I'm getting hurt. I'm getting hurt big time. And I'm not hurting them at all. What? Come on. Come on, I got to be hurting them a little bit. Ow!
Actually, I would actually be interested in like a campaign that went back into more primitive ships and explored the origins of the human Vasudan conflict. You know, before the Shivans were even in the picture.
Yeah. You're not alone in that. There are a few campaigns that are set before Free Space 1. And there's of course Free Space, the Free Space port, which allows you to play the original Free Space, and Silent Threat Reborn, which gives you another campaign in that sort of time frame.
I bought it.
Yeah, you're pretty much dead. Yeah.
That was pretty amazing. that was pretty incredible.
Yeah, I just think it's really neat that you can pull off just, you know, flying a cap ship and you manage to shoehorn in like the mass drivers and Gauss cannons and, you know, the torpedoes and everything and what's tracking what. And that's way beyond what I thought the engine was scoped for. So very cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, again, it's not something it was built for originally, but, well, you can do it now.
It's just amazing what you can do with this thing. Oh, that threat is amazing.
Oh, wait, hang on a second. Okay, now it's too late.
What?
It just wanted to ask you to show off the intro cutscene to War in Heaven 2.
Oh, hang on.
That's one of the more impressive
impressive
things that the engine can do these days.
So where do I find that?
If you start again with the War in Heaven mod active, so basically just what you did right now.
Okay. Okay, then I go to go away. So War in Heaven 2? Go to War in Heaven 2?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, whoa. Okay, that's bright. And
I don't think we're seeing the we don't have it on the stream right now.
Well, yeah, there's a 30-second delay. I'm loading
that's right.
So I can load up the intro cutscene. Is that the one you're talking about?
Yeah, right.
All
right,
I will do that. It's pretty amazing.
Hang on. It's not the cutscene. It's if you go in the main hall, just go on the continue button. The first mission it loads, that's the actual intro cutscene.
Oh, okay.
Because the introduction movie you're seeing here, that's just a pre-rendered cutscene that one of our community members did. It's impressive, and it also shows off some of the skills that our community has. But the more impressive one, that's the real-time rendered one, at least right. In my humble opinion.
It's taking a little while to load.
It's a big one.
Yeah. I don't know if I've played this one yet, so I might have to start.
I think I showed it off a couple of months ago when we were setting up this interview.
There it goes. Yeah, so it's playing the intro cutscene. Wow, already, wow. That's, oh my God, the reflections.
It's one of the benchmarks I'm using to figure out if, it's one of the big stress tests we can put the engine through, because it really, there's a lot going on in this, and it can bring nearly every machine I tried it on to its knees.
Yeah, mine is fairly. Oh my God, yeah, mine is a fairly good machine. I've got a GTX 770 in here, and this is chugging a tiny bit because there's just so much going. Wow, there's so much going on here. Is there any way I can make this a screensaver? I would totally love this. It's just like replayed over and over.
Yeah, whatever that starfighter is that's flying there, that thing is super pimp. It's got a lot of guns.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, it's the Uriel gunship, which you actually get to fly in the later parts of War in Heaven, and it's really a super fun machine.
Oh, I think I'm going to be playing some War in Heaven as a Let's Play, interspersed with the Free Space Let's Play. Holy crap!
This cutscene It just does so many things that are only possible because of the work we did on the source code. It's really one of my go-to pieces to show people what we did in the 10 years we've been working on it.
I can understand that, because the amount of things happening on the screen is amazing. The amount of objects on the screen is amazing, and just the lighting effects, the reflections, the detail—it's really just astounding. And the beams! Oh my God, the beams! Oh no, Blue Planet, War in Heaven. Yeah, this is really astounding. That's just amazing. Ugh.
Yeah, it's.
What was that?
It's really cool watching the wing, the missiles like detach from the wing of the fighter and take off, and yeah, there's a lot of things going on here that were just kind of abstracted away in the original game.
Well, in the original game, the cutscenes like that, they were rendered.
Yeah, it was all.
But they didn't have as many, but they didn't like they weren't anywhere near as big as that. Whatever.
That's a good time.
Whoa. Oh, I'm in a simulation. Or a dream or something.
Does it look that good? You're like, I'm dreaming. That's
no, that's what this text is saying. It's some kind of dreamscape. This is a responsible thing.
I think you really shouldn't progress any further because there's a lot of spoilers coming up for the latter stages of War in Heaven. I think it's best to experience it sequentially as it was intended.
Okay, so when I do, should I do the other one first and then War in Heaven, or should I just do War in Heaven first? Or
ideally, you should play through Age of Aquarius, then War in Heaven, and then War in Heaven 2.
Okay.
You don't really need to play Age of Aquarius, but doing so gives you a lot of background that you kind of need for War in Heaven.
Yeah, I'm liking that map view that it's up on the stream now, where it's like he's in the cockpit of the ship, but he's actually looking at a map. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's what we did in War in Heaven 2 is we set up this sort of simulation space where between missions you can interact with your wingman and your commanding officer and your intelligence officer and various other people, just to give you a sense of their characters and give you a chance to interact with them outside of a mission so that you can learn more about them and build a relationship with them.
Oh, neat.
All right, let's load Age of Aquarius then. I've played a little of that one. I gotta start another pilot. Oh, fudgy whoosh.
I don't know if that's legal in Scrabble. Fudgy whoosh is not a word.
Well, it can be.
I just made it up. I don't.
It's a space word.
So Age of Aquarius was made before War in Heaven.
Age of Aquarius was made by a single person, Darius, who basically set off one day to make to tell his story, and it was one of the most impressive mod releases we've had in the past decade.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of mention of it, but like I never played it. You know, so I really feel okay. Something's weird's happening. Oh, hang on, maybe I'm doing something wrong. Okay,
something strange just happened.
Yeah, it crashed. Hang on. So I set it to the BP executable. And I set it to the Blue Planet mod. Okay, just preset. I'm going to turn the presets off. I have the presets on. I'm going to turn those off. Save it, and we're going to try it again. Okay, there's the screen. Yeah, oh, for God's sakes. Okay, so we're going to delete that guy. We're going to create a new pilot.
If you're not getting anywhere with that, I'm going to send you a link to an updated build that you can use with Blue Planet. Hopefully that'll fix a few problems. The problems you're having right now.
Okay. Yeah, because I played a little Age of Aquarius last night and it was fine, and then I installed the other one and now this one's funky. Okay, let me see. Blue Planet. Anyway, so yeah, mods, folks.
they exist and they are great.
Mods are awesome. Yes, mods are amazing.
Oh, so you're saying there are some mods for Free Space.
But sometimes they crash, and sometimes things happen. And it's going to take 3 minutes to download.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, that's fine.
Well, I think we're in a good spot here.
Oh my gosh.
Long.
We've had a long.
Okay.
Wow. That's what happens when you have fun.
Yeah, this has been a long one.
Yeah, exactly.
In space, no one can see your watch.
I totally lost track of time. I'm going to be playing some more Free Space today, I think, because God, this game. I mean, you're in the thick of it with all the source code stuff. But like, just as a fan, to see all this hard work being put up by the community is inspiring. It really is inspiring. And that's why go ahead.
One of my great hopes for the future is that when games like Elite Dangerous and Enemy Starfighter and Star Citizen, when they release, that they can capture some of that spirit, some of that engagement from the community or from their communities. So if we can see what a lot of creativity come out of those projects as well.
Right. It's pretty goddamn amazing. Okay, yeah. Wow, there's so many of these executionables, I swear to God. Okay. So BP, my God. What is AVX BP?
There are two different builds, SSE2, no SSE, and AVX. Those are instruction sets that can be used by your PC. If you have a modern CPU, you should use the AVX build. It's should be the fastest one available.
Oh, that's not the one I chose.
It doesn't matter that much. The performance improvements you get from the SSE or the AVX build, just a couple of frames per second here or there.
It's
going to matter.
Okay, it crashed again.
Well, great.
I know, it's fabulous. Let's make sure. Okay, Blue Planet is activated, and it's Free Space Open 371 AVXBP. Let's try one more.
We can do a bit more in-depth troubleshooting later, but I don't think that's something that we should be doing on stream.
Right. Yeah. Well, no, it's kind of fun.
Yeah, let's go ahead and sign it out, and then I'll edit that chunk out. And then we're good.
I'll play with it later. No, leave it. I think it's funny. Leave it, because, you know, that's...
Because I don't edit anything. That's
leave it. But, Fabian, I want to thank you for joining us. This is a lot of fun, very educational, not only to me as a fan, for us too, because it's been great learning about the ins and outs of the project. It's been great learning more about how to make everything work and what's available. And hopefully... When I can point people to two places now when I tell people to buy Free Space, the open installer and this list of campaigns.
Yeah.
That's exactly what you should be doing, because this is really good stuff. But folks, if you have not played Free Space 2, what the hell is wrong with you? It is still the finest game in this little genre of ours, and nothing in 15 years has even come close to beating its gameplay, its story. It's an amazing achievement, even today. So thank you, everyone, for listening. And if you have any questions, you could hit us up in the comments or hail@spacegamejunkie.com. Thank you again, Fabian, for joining us. Thank you, Jim, for co-hosting and asking questions while I was busy shooting things. And we'll talk to you later. Whoa.
Okay.
And bye.
Let's have some music in here, Boiler. Sure thing.
I bet sunshine down, but I see only one. Try to think I'm over you. I find I've just begun. The years move faster than the days. There's no more than the light. And how I miss those desert skies. You're cool.